Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The Nolan Wells timeline, that's what we're going through today in this this video. This is a very active case, moving case. Things are changing sometimes by the hour, so just know that while you're watching this. If you're wanting to get yourself caught up, this is a good place to start. But no, obviously, things change. But here's where we're at, because there's so many things in this case that are simply odd, not adding up, weird inconsistencies in the life of Nolan Wells. The last moments, I should say, specifically, of Nolan Wells. And when he's found dead, yeah, people have a right to ask those questions. Nolan deserves the answers. The people around him deserve answers. His family deserves answers. People being accused of heinous things deserve answers if they had nothing to do with this. Facts, the truth, shall set you free. It's not going to bring him back. But facts and reality and truth are the only path that should be explored in this case. So we're going to go through the timeline of what we know so far in this and break it down. And love for you to give me your thoughts, your opinions in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in the description. Be sure to hit subscribe, because we're going to keep following this thing wherever it may lead. Let's start here. Nolan Wells photographed everything. So when his mother opened his phone looking for the last day of his life, when she got his phone back, she expected to find it. Instead, she found nothing. Christine Wansley opened Noah's Snapchat inside the 24-hour window before the timer could wipe it, because Snapchat is where teenagers actually live. That is where his last day should have been. But there were no saved pictures, no snaps from the 4th of July, a blank screen from the one day everyone in the country wants to see. His mother said that emptiness is exactly why the family believes something was deleted. The question is why? A kid who documented his whole life left behind an empty account from the single day that matters. That is where this all starts. And it is a preview of how the rest goes. The most important pieces of this case are the ones that are currently missing. I'm not accusing anyone of any crimes in this. The only thing I'm saying is, let's find out the truth, because if you're being accused of these horrible things, and we're not doing that, I'm not calling anyone out, I'm not saying anybody did anything to him, we don't know the answer to that question. And if you are one of those people, it is in your best interest for facts and truth to come out if nothing has happened. That's what the truth shall set you free. Again, if there's nothing to hide, there's odd things going on here, but odd things happen in life too. There may be simple reasons and explanations for some of these things that we go, about, but it's important to parse all that out so anyone and everyone involved here can have a clear picture of who this man was, what was going on in his life at the moment all of this went down. And Nolan, by all accounts here, had a lot of friends who loved him, who cared deeply for him. And if he's on the other side looking at this, and if this was some sort of horrible accident, you can bet, I'm sure he's not going, yeah, go after people who had nothing to do with this. Or if they did, he may be cheering that effort on. I don't know. We just don't know. And it's important not to jump into this camp or that camp. The truth camp is the only camp that matters right now. Here's what missing looks like in this case. A young woman Nolan met that day says he told her he was heading back to catch the boat with the boys. The boys say Nolan told them he was staying behind to talk to her. Both of those can't be true. Or could they? Could they? Could they both be true? And something else happened along the way. I don't know. The boys say Nolan told them he was staying behind to talk to her. She said he was going back with the boys. Same afternoon, same handful of hours. Two accounts pointing in opposite directions. And the one person who could tell you which one is right is the one who never came home. The facts nobody disputes in this case fit in a single paragraph. Everything wrapped around them is people talking. Nolan Wells was 18, Ocean Springs, Mississippi, a student athlete at Southwest Mississippi Community College, a wide receiver, a business major, known to the people who loved him as No-No. On the evening of July 3rd, he made his family salmon for dinner. Then he left to spend the night with friends ahead of the holiday. He cooked for his family. Then he went to celebrate the 4th on the water, the way plenty of Americans do. The water in this case is Horn Island. It sits about 10 miles off the Mississippi coast. It is a federally protected barrier island. It's pristine sand. It's wild. It's uninhabited. There's no shelter. There's no facilities, no drinking water, no communications, just a good place to go with your friends and hang out and get away from everything and just be. I said this the other day. This reminds me a bit of the celebrations, if you will. Remember the TV or the movie American Pie? The summer before everybody goes off to life. Youth is done. You're now going into adulthood, into college life. Crazy things happen. People are doing stuff. And I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm just saying that's kind of the atmosphere, if you will, for where this story is taking place. Just put it on a barrier island. Everything that comes after this is the part that matters most. There's no cameras. I mean, people have phones, but there's like security cameras on the trees. What people have on their phones is going to be important. There's no neutral witnesses. Whatever happened out there happened in a place where nobody officially could see it, at least not that we've seen yet. There's no footage. There's no record. There's only what people say. On the 4th, a group of high school friends took private boats out to the island. By one friend's account, they had been drinking since late morning. At some point in the afternoon, the group headed back to the mainland, and Nolan did not go with them. Sheriff John Ledbetter would later tell the Associated Press that from the people they had talked to, it sounded like Nolan chose to stay on the island, assuming he would ride back with someone else. That's the official explanation for how an 18-year-old ended up alone on a barrier island 10 miles out. He chose to stay. One of his own friends does not buy it. Javon Williams, who saw Nolan on the island that day, told CNN he had never known Nolan to stay back while his friends left. If Nolan rode out with you, he came back with you every single time. Do people sometimes do things that are out of the ordinary? Yeah, it does happen. I can't say that that's not a possibility, but it would be out of character. So even the people who were there cannot agree on the one decision that started all of this. Around 11 o'clock that night, one of the friends from the trip called the Coast Guard to report him missing. Nolan's family reported him missing, too. The search launched the next day. The Coast Guard, Mississippi's Department of Marine Resources, and a volunteer group called the United Cajun Navy canvassed the island by boat and by air. On Monday, July 6th, they found a body in the water near the shoreline, and it did match Nolan's description. Back home, the town came apart at the seams. More than 100 people gathered in the streets of Ocean Springs carrying signs that read, "Justice for Nolan Wells." The school district opened the high school auditorium for a grief session. The mayor posted about coming together, and underneath all of it ran a current of suspicion that the people in charge were not telling the whole story. A lot of emotion. Without a doubt, a lot of emotion. Is it directed in the right way without enough information? We just don't know yet. And when someone tragically dies, a young, successful, smart man who has his whole future ahead of him, loved by his friends, his family, you're going to want to hope it's something, in a weird way, more than just some stupid accident. And in the same way, you don't want it to be something more, because that means there's something nefarious going on. Or something that people just don't want to be accountable for going on as well. There's a lot of ifs. And the word justice that early in a case, truth, may be the right word, until we're able to understand if there's something nefarious at play here, which, look, like I said, as of this recording, we don't know that. Could that come out later? Very possibly. We are going to keep following this, but just keep in mind when you're typing your comments that as of this moment, there's a lot of weird things, but we don't necessarily have anything to go, here's what justice looks like at this exact second. But we may get there very quickly. We may. And that's the important thing. You have to keep an open mind on any of this. But it is important to discuss and play within the rules of the information we actually have, not sheer emotion this way or that way or whatever way. The county coroner said there were no immediate signs of physical injury, but he did not close the door. He requested a full autopsy, and the state medical examiner's office, specifically because of the condition of the body, was found in to determine one way or the other whether there was trauma or foul play. That's a coroner saying he cannot tell yet. So they are going to look harder. Good. That's a good thing. It wasn't nothing to see here. Okay. That's good. That's good information. That's good news. You're going to cross the T, dot the I. Good. This is where the story, the internet told itself, starts to come apart. The single most shared piece of evidence in this whole case is a video. It was shot from a boat, and it shows a group of young people in what looks like a heated altercation. For days, it circulated as the last known footage of Nolan Wells, proof that something was done to him. The family's attorney, Ben Crum, stood at a press conference on July 10th and said you could hear Nolan in that video demanding his phone back. That interpretation went everywhere, and that's an interpretation. I'm not here to say it's right or wrong, but it is an interpretation from one perspective. Then the man whose voice is actually on the recording came forward, and he's saying, that's not Nolan. That's me. He says the voice yelling in that clip is his, not Nolan. He says the words were his, and they had nothing to do with the phone. He had gotten into a fight after an argument with his girlfriend, and what he was screaming while people held him back was that he wanted off the boat to go finish it. He says the young man in blue trunks that people online decided was Nolan is too short to be his 6'2" friend. And he says Nolan is not in the video at all. This is what's important to understand about cases like this. Everybody wants to jump on. You see some comments going, see, this is this, this is that, this is who this is. Oh my God, this is that. And then more people jump on and more people jump on and more people jump on. And before you know it, there's a whole narrative over here that's not even based in reality. Now, could the friend be telling, not telling the truth? Again, anything is possible. But again, if you're looking at the circle of friends that he had around him, it's a double-edged sword, because if they're telling you, here's what's really going on, and by all accounts, he had a very loving group of friends, so this would be way out of the ordinary for them to do something to him on purpose. If you go down the narrative of well, they're protecting themselves, so of course they're going to make up things, then it's easy to jump onto that boat. Or if you're looking at it from the other perspective of there's so many perspectives to look at here, and it's easy to jump on a confirmation bias this way or that way, because when you don't know, you try to fill in the blanks. And there's a lot of that going on. The important thing here to say is we don't know. We don't know. And it's irresponsible to jump onto a video that can't be confirmed to be who's in it or whose voice is what, other than speculation and going, well, this one fits how I feel emotionally. Cool, but is that fact? Is that fact? That's what you got to ask yourself, because there's a lot of information out there right now. So he says he is not the one saying it. Another friend, Javon Williams, told CMZ the voice sounded like it came from a boat, not from the shore, and then confirmed the person he was describing was Shepard. So the loudest piece of evidence in this case so far, the thing the entire theory got built on, fell apart the moment someone who was actually standing there explained what it was, if they're telling the truth. Which brings us back to the empty phone. And this, again, this is where it cuts both ways. Crump says the friends took Nolan's phone with them when they left, which is a bit odd. And then when the family finally got back, messages had been deleted. That's a serious claim. If there's one piece thus far in this case that makes you go, this would be it. More than, I think, a obscure video that's unidentifiable and has a lot of emotionally charged people behind it. Why are you taking your friend's phone back with you when he's going to stay on the island? That's a weird one. And until we get like a logical answer to this, there's going to be questions. The missing Snapchat sits right next to it. That also rather weird. My first question about the Snapchat is, was there service? I mean, could there be something on the island where it wasn't saving to Snapchat? I mean, the digital forensics of the phone are going to tell us a lot of things. And as I said in another video, examining everyone's phone from out there before things can be deleted or gotten rid of or whatever, or wiped, not even because there's anything criminal on it, but because people are paranoid that somebody's going to misconstrue something for criminality. Those things need to be saved right now, if they haven't been already. Shepard offers a completely ordinary explanation for the same emptiness. He says everybody left their phones in the boats that day. Almost nobody was taking photos because almost everybody was in the water. He says Nolan set his own phone down on the dash of a boat alongside what he estimated was 15 other phones. And the boating community, he says, leaving your phone behind on the water is just what you do. So there's that. if he did stay behind by choice, did he just forget, hey, my phone's on the boat, I'll get it back later, I don't really need it on the aisle? I don't know. I mean, is it plausible? Yeah, I mean, it's not a crazy idea. We all think of everybody with their phone attached to themselves, but at the same point, when you're out in those sort of environments, maybe you just put it down and you, I don't know. A lot of possibilities here. The phone itself is the one thing that could settle which of them is right. And for now, it sits in Crump's possession, not the state's. His team and the county's investigators have agreed to go through it together side by side. Until they do, that deletion claim and the ordinary explanation are just two stories pointing at the same blank screen. So here's what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to tie a bow on it. The video supposedly has an innocent explanation. The empty phone might have one too, or might not. Some of these contradictions dissolve the second you look closely, and some of them just sit there doing nothing but making a grieving family trust the process a little less. And it's not like Mississippi don't have no history of not being the most trustworthy when it comes to people of color disappearing. So anybody who's like, well, it could it possibly be this? No, I mean, it could. Is it highly likely with this group of teens that appear to all be really tight? It's not 1960. So we are in a bit of a different environment. But is there still racism? Is there still shitty people out there? Yes, of course there is. Is there really any evidence to show that these friends were like that towards him? Not that I've seen as of yet, but I'm all ears. From actual evidence, not just somebody who wants to jump onto this case, get in front of the podium to get a little more clicks, a little more attention their way for their cause of turning every damn thing into something that it's not. Or maybe it is. We don't know. That's why it's important to ask questions. That's why it is important. But be cautious. Be suspicious of the people who are clamoring onto this story to run with a narrative that has nothing to do with it. Be cautious. Or they're running a narrative that they want to be connected to the story. And maybe it is, but you can't and you shouldn't run a narrative until you actually have facts. That is important. Officials believe Nolan may have drowned. They say they have not found evidence of foul play. The family does not accept that. If it was my kid, I probably wouldn't either. I'd be wanting more information. Crump points out that Nolan knew how to swim and was in shape as an athlete and argues that if he had drowned, somebody nearby would have seen him struggling or gone to help, maybe. But you know what, dude? This happens all the time to people who can swim, who know how to swim, who become incapacitated and everybody's paying attention over here and somebody dies over there. That ain't an impossibility. And it has nothing to do with the color of your skin. Shit happens sometimes. And sometimes really dark shit happens too to people for wrong reasons. It's important to look at both sides, as I keep saying. It's just important not to jump onto one side or the other without knowing facts. It's a fair thing for a parent to ask the questions. According to the National Drowning Prevention Alliance, drowning is fast and silent and does not look the way people expect it to. A strong swimmer going under is not always a scene. Sometimes it is the absence of one. That's how it happens. Not because, oh my God, he's drowning over there. It's more like, where the hell did he go? Where did he go? There's riptides. There's currents in the ocean. That shit can kill you very quickly. I've been pulled out by one myself. It's not fun. Both things can be true at once. A family that cannot believe an athlete drowned, and a reality where drowning does not announce itself. There's one more layer here, and it is one that turned a local tragedy into a national story. In the photos from the boat, Nolan is the only black man in the group. Those images have become a kind of national inkblot test. Crump invoked the history directly. He called Mississippi the state where Emmett Till was murdered. Very true. He said he sees contradictions in several of the witness statements. Yeah, and there are. But are these contradictions because of that or because of people are drinking, they're kids? It was chaotic. I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm just trying to put other chunks of reality in front of what other possibilities may be at play here, considering there doesn't appear to be any evidence of his friends being horrible racists. There does not appear to be any evidence as of yet that the friends were like, oh, let's, you know. Has that happened in that state in the past? My God, yes. Is there reason to be cautious and ask these questions? My God, yes. But again, when we get these questions answered, when we see the evidence of what we see, then we do have to at some point go, this isn't exactly what happened many years ago. Or still does happen in many parts of the state with absolutely horrible, deplorable pieces of shit, racist assholes. But again, does this friend group, do these all these people who love each other, and does this look like that? I don't think it does. But again, and I could be wrong. There could be evidence that pops up that says different that we are unaware of. The state pushed back, and it pushed back fast. The commissioner of public safety said there is no indication that anything regarding race led to this. Shepard, from inside the friend group, described that group as very diverse in race and ethnicity, and said there was nobody in it who would ever hurt Nolan. And Al Sharpton, of all people, drew the line about as fairly as it can be drawn. He said he was not bringing race into it, but he was not discouraging or discounting it either, because nobody yet knows what it is. So, okay. Yeah. We don't know what it is. The state slammed the door shut before the autopsy was even finished, telling a grieving family not to jump to conclusions about race is fair. Announcing there is no racial component while you're still waiting on toxicology is not caution. It is the same overconfidence that created this whole mess in the first place. Don't tell us what to think this way or that way until we actually have information. The investigation is ongoing. That's the right word. It's not this, it's not that. It's we just don't know yet. Look what that overconfidence did to the living. The friends who said they would die for Nolan are getting death threats. Shepard would not even go on camera out of fear for his own safety. Nolan's mother has spent part of her grief begging strangers online to report videos generated by artificial intelligence, fake clips spreading lies about how her son died. She's had to call out fake fundraising accounts using her dead child to collect money. The young men who are with Nolan have hired lawyers, and Crump says he has not been able to speak with a single one of them. Strangers who decided these kids were guilty are hunting the people who loved Nolan most over a video that's not apparently even of him. And all of it, every last piece, traces back to one sentence. When the sheriff's office recovered the body, it put out a statement that no foul play was suspected. You can't really say that until you know. Said before the autopsy, with no explanation of why. No reasoning, no evidence, just a conclusion. Handed to the public in a state with a history this one has about a young black man who was the only person of color in the frame. For the love of God, authorities with microphones and power, take a breath before you say something out loud. Even if in your heart you're thinking, this looks like a good group of friends, something bad happened here. You don't know that yet. And your words matter to the public. They become a dog whistle for people who want to go down this road or go down that road. Don't send people down any roads until you know what road you're sending them down and why. A former police chief who ran both Philadelphia and Washington looked at that and said in so many words that it was a poor choice of words. What the sheriff probably meant was that there was no immediate obvious signs. Well, gee, wouldn't that have been helpful? It's very different than no foul play with no autopsy, and we don't know any of that yet. That seems like jumping to conclusions and covering one's ass very quickly. Whether you intended to or not, or you're just a dipshit that speaks out loud and doesn't understand that words have power. And the irony that nobody rushing to judgment wants to hear is that the same analyst says nothing about this case is actually unusual. It is completely normal for a death investigation to take a week or more. It is. It is normal to wait on toxicology. What investigators have to do from here is exactly what you would want them to do. Interview each friend, the young woman, one at the time, and one at a time, and see whether the stories hold up. That's not a cover-up. That's the job, and it takes time. You want it now. If I was the parents, I'd be clamoring. I'd be on the phone every freaking hour. What do you know? But it takes time. They just better be doing it. But the sheriff did not say, give us time. He said, no foul play. And into the space between that sentence and the truth, the whole circus rushed in. Colin Kaepernick helped pay for the family's independent autopsy. Tyler Perry is covering the funeral. And the family flew their son's body all the way to Washington to a doctor with no ties to Mississippi law enforcement. They no longer trusted anyone in their own state to tell them how their child died. And you know what? If I was a black family in Mississippi, I can't say I would either. After all of it, the press conferences, the protests, the national coverage, the private pathologists, here is where it actually stands. The family's independent autopsy was supposed to come back on July 10th. It's got delayed over problems transporting the body. The state's findings, as of this recording, are still pending. Waiting on toxicology, that can take weeks. The sheriff says he's been in contact with the FBI. The friends have attorneys. Once the investigation wraps, the district attorney will hand the case to the grand jury. Her office made clear that this is routine for a suspicious death, not an accusation against anyone. That has not stopped the fakes online from having or inventing a trial that does not exist. And there is still no cause of death, not from the state, not from the family's own doctor. The one thing every side has been screaming about is the one thing that nobody actually has. So let me leave you with a kid, because he keeps disappearing inside his own story. His high school coach said Nolan carried himself with humility, treated people with respect, worked hard, and led by example. Wouldn't it be nice if the people around him after his passing did the same? Shepard said he made sure everyone felt included, and he only ever saw the good you brought into the world. One more fact. Nolan Wells was supposed to be back at school that Monday to start training for the upcoming football season. That Monday. The same Monday they found his body in the water. The honest version of the Nolan Wells timeline, as of now, is a list of things nobody can prove, defended on every side by people who have already made up their minds. The internet decided it was a hate crime. The state decided it was not foul play. Both of them decided before the results came back. The empty phone, the two versions of that last conversation, the voice in the video, the water, the one person who could actually settle any of this, is the only one in this whole story who does not get to say a word. I do not know what happened. It could go anyway. my request to any of you out there would be to be cautious with the information you take in and the conclusions that you make. Because sometimes you just can't make conclusions until you have all the information. And as of right now, that's where we're sitting. We don't have all the information to make conclusions. We will get there. And we will follow it wherever it goes. But facts do matter. We'll keep following and we will keep asking questions. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and we'll continue the conversation there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Nolan Wells went to Horn Island with his friends on the 4th of July. His friends came back. He did not. His body was found in the water 2 days later. And before the autopsy was finished, before toxicology could come back, before the FBI touched his phone, the sheriff told the country no foul play was suspected. The question is whether this investigation is structured to follow the evidence wherever it leads, or whether that early statement already pointed it somewhere and it's been walking in that direction ever since. I'm here to say, I don't know, but words do matter. You may remember another sheriff, Mr. Nanos, who had that harsh reality check earlier in the year where his words matter, wasn't used to people taking him so seriously. This is a different sheriff, different words, but no foul play is suspected before an autopsy, before toxicology, before the FBI touches the digital evidence. I don't quite know how you get there. That's the question I think we're going to start with this morning. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor with myself, and Robin Drake, former FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. Let's start there. Eric, what does a statement like that do to the direction of an investigation that, you know, it's in its super early stages? They didn't have all the data. So how do you go and make a statement like that to the public? What's going on here?
Tony, I'm worried that such a statement issued prematurely can have a chilling effect on the investigation. You know, if there are multiple agencies involved, they're all hearing this and they're saying, oh, well, you know, perhaps we can kind of put this on the back burner. We've got a lot of other work we got to do. And so I'm worried that it would take away from sort of the dedication of resources and manpower and everything else that is required to really unearth what happened here, because it's still obviously an ongoing mystery. They don't know the answers. And if you don't know the answers, how can you say whether foul play is suspected or not? I just thought it's terribly premature.
Yeah, you definitely lay down an early confirmation bias with that. And it happens in multiple layers where now they're going to move in a direction, again, totally potentially unconsciously, but just move in a direction where they're trying to confirm that there is no foul play involved. And then also you cascade on top of that the position of the sheriff, position of authority. You're looking for promotion. Do you really want to go against what your boss already said? So it really sets things up, you know, for potential not goodness. So how do you think they walk that back? How do you walk something back if you're the sheriff to now go back into the world that we should be living in, the world of maybe? The world of maybe opens up all possibilities that we can explore all the tendrils that go out from this and go, like we said at the opening, where the investigation takes us.
Robin, very true. And I think that certainly law enforcement needs to be now kind of overly diligent. I think they need to sort of overcompensate for this statement that they made, in the sense of, you know, we need to interview everybody under the sun we can possibly find. We need to seize digital devices where appropriate that might have information revealing what happened here. We need to talk to all of these businesses. We need to scour all of the premises for potential video evidence, all of those things. I think they really need to be overly diligent now because of that statement that was issued.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really tone-deaf statement to make. I mean, especially in the atmosphere we're in the state they're in, with the track record of the state that we're in. And it's just like, come on, dude. Come on. Even there's no room for that just sort of flippantness in something like this, where everything is ripe to explode very quick and people want to go down this road of a narrative or that road of a narrative. Words matter. I don't know what it takes. I want to take these sheriffs and just shake them. Like, come on, your words matter. You're in the position. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm somewhat trying to give a benefit of the doubt. Maybe it's just another one of these. I'm not used to saying shit in public and people listening, because I don't know. I would think once you have that title, once you've worked your way up to sheriff, you kind of got to take your job and what you say seriously. Was this just a slip of the tongue, just a bad way of describing something? We've all done it. We've all said things like, oh, I wish I would have said it more that way. Should he just at this point just walk that back? Just say, look, I misspoke. I kind of meant to say it this way. It's on me. Just own the damn thing. Or is it better at this point just to shut up and show in action in the investigative work that they are taking this seriously, rather than just give lip service to the public?
Why not give just an updated statement to the public? You know, he doesn't necessarily have to say, hey, I kind of screwed up when I said this thing inartfully, but instead give an updated status to the public in terms of the actions that are being undertaken to investigate what may have happened here. And I think that would probably suffice. It doesn't have to be the sort of hat in hand, oh, what was me thing, but they can be like, hey, you know, here is all the things we're doing. In fact, we're enlisting other agencies. I've heard the FBI might be involved. Yeah. Give the public some assurance that there is a diligent investigation going on. That might be the next appropriate step.
Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, and I looked at that too. So, you know, I did a deeper dive again from what we know, you know, seeing if we do have another Nanos in the making here. And from the outset, from what we know now as this recording, no, he's actually got a really good sheriff. The sheriff here is an elected position, but he was appointed, so he wasn't elected. He will be up for election when it comes to. He's a National Academy graduate, which he was selected to go through FBI's National Academy. He's got a good reputation. His department's got a good reputation. So I'm hoping that he can do what you just said, Eric, because what you do in times when you blow trust, which had happened here by statements like that, the only thing you can really do is then give that transparency in areas in which people don't feel safe. And so, like, to your point, if he now just counters the foible of words with a lot of transparency, more frequent updates, and just what's going on, it goes a long way. And to your question about the FBI's involvement, and then one of our listeners, I did look it up. The FBI is involved, like they generally are in big cases like this, in a support role, looking at digital and forensics and such. So that's what I found out.
With this being not, as of this moment, it's not being classified as anything nefarious as of this moment. What sort of latitude do the local authorities have to do a deeper investigation, to look into everything that could disappear quickly, everything that could be destroyed or not already has been destroyed on people's devices, on digital records, all of those sort of things? The bilge pump, go take a look at that. Was there actually water coming in on the boat? All these sort of things. From my understanding, and I think a lot of people's understanding, when you're at this stage, and it's not a criminal investigation yet, it may never be, it's a lot of suggesting, it's a lot of asking, please volunteer, come forward, give us the information. And if you have nothing to hide, I would say, hopefully, yes. I mean, for the sake of everybody involved, that if there's nothing going on, please look at my device. You'll see we were friends. I don't know what the hell's going on here, but this should help port you in that direction. But people are also going to clam up. They're going to circle wagons, and circling the wagons sometimes looks like conspiracy, sometimes looks like cover-up, when they're just afraid of getting a finger pointed at them for something that wasn't actually there, but the mob is already there with the pitchforks ready to go after them. There's already been death threats against friends and all of that that's been going on. What latitude do they have to get in, to get that information from everyone that was around to put together a picture of what happened with it not being a criminal investigation yet?
Well, Tony, they have broad investigatory powers, even if they haven't got to the place where they believe it's criminal yet. They still have a number of things at their disposal, including like all standard law enforcement resources. So we're talking about, manpower, procuring video, getting statements, doing interviews, assessing the scene, assessing things that were at the scene, like the boat. On top of that, according to reports, there is some allegation that some of the statements may have been inconsistent. There's mm-hmm. some allegation that some of the timelines from different folks might not match up. And so those are prime examples of things on which law enforcement can hone in and try to either confirm or deny, hey, was this just some coincidence, some mistake? Or instead, do we have, two people saying things that couldn't possibly both be true?
You know, to that point, Eric, I'm sorry, Tony, did you want to go?
You're good.
So to that point, Eric, the easiest thing we have as an investigator early on in a case like this, as you're investigating to see if it's, just a horrendous accident or if it is criminal, is like you said, it's a lot of interviewing. You conduct a lot of interviews and then you're cross-referencing these interviews. At what stage what do you need to hear as a prosecutor and an official to elevate it from to the next level? Because we always go by intrusiveness of the technique used. The least intrusive is an interview. You do an interview, you take notes, and then you keep interviewing all these people involved. You can observe from the outside without being intrusive and getting a subpoena. Subpoena requires probable cause. That's what starts elevating it. What are you going to need as a prosecutor, do you think, to elevate this, or a judge is going to want to hear to elevate from an interview of someone? Is an inconsistent statement between two people enough, or do they need something more?
Sure. So we have, like you said, the interview level is really the introductory level. And then from there, you need to look into search warrants and production of records requests, where you request from digital devices or from apps on digital devices, information about activity, things like that. In order to get to that place, Robin, you do need probable cause, but probable cause is a pretty low standard. That's, reasonable grounds to believe that a crime has occurred and that there's someone who is the perpetrator of that crime. You put that together in a search warrant, you give it to a judge, see if a judge allows you further access into, like you said, these more intrusive legal mechanisms like search warrants and what have you. Inconsistent statement probably in and of itself is not enough, but an absence of an innocent explanation is something that the judge can also consider. And when you put all of those together, do you meet that low standard of probable cause? That's up to a judge.
So on that, I'm so sorry, Tony, I'm so curious about how we get at the cell phones.
Yeah.
Because the mother has the son's cell phone, and she's claiming that from her baseline of understanding her son's behavior, she's got her life's arc of her son. He's usually doing X, Y, and Z, texting at this time of day, taking photos, and she says it's absent. She has possession of that, so I'm assuming that she now is the authority that can give access to that cell phone. I'm curious, though, so say there's another individual, friends, family, or whoever's out on that boat. If they have cell phones they've voluntarily turned over, because we heard they did or were asked to at least, as of this recording, if someone's noting that there, is that enough, in other words, for someone else? Is it enough that it's been stated or assumed, or a friend said, I think he deleted or she deleted stuff from that cell phone? Is that enough to get a warrant to search? Or what's the bar for it?
Are we at a probable cause state, I guess, question is going to be. Are we at a probable cause state with the inconsistent statements? Because, I mean, you do have the big one that everybody talks about is the allegedly these are unconfirmed, but it is what it is. Allegedly, some reports are saying that some of the boys said that he was going to go and get a ride back. He wanted to go hang out with the girl. The girl says he was going to go ride back with his friends. The family says he would always ride back with his friends. friends. It's not impossible for an 18-year-old to change course when they see a pretty girl and go, I know I normally would go back with you guys, but I'm going over here. And it would be a deviation of behavior, but it's not an impossibility of deviation of behavior. So, I mean, is that an area where that would be probable cause because of the conflicting, inconsistent statements? Or is that, does that not reach that bar? I know the bar is low, but is that, does that quite get there?
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't be shocking for a 40-year-old to change course and go pursue a pretty girl.
Sure.
You know, those things happen, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, is that enough? I think what we're talking about is a lack of some kind of natural explanation in terms of what happened. And then the witnesses who would have possession of the information regarding what happened appear to be inconsistent. Does that give rise to reasonable grounds as to whether there was a potential criminal cause of what happened? I think when you have these conflicting statements, you have an absence of a natural explanation, at least presently. I think that we're getting close. I don't know if, but then Tony, like you mentioned, the deleting stuff from the phone, a judge could look at that as potential concealment, as potentially withholding information. And I think when you put all those things together, is a judge going to err on the side of, I'm going to give you access to these devices because we need to know what happened to this kiddo? I think probably.
How much of this is everyone applying their own narrative to the story he's always on Snapchat and no way, my God, this mother is grieving her son. She's trying to look at his behaviors and go, well, this seems out of character. So no way am I like questioning her or saying, you know, anything negative here. But sometimes people do things that are out of character. There's other people, other friends who've made statements now about, yeah, when we're out on the boat or we're out on the beach here, we put our phones on the boat and it sits there. So maybe he wasn't out there snapping all day. I was wondering about service on the damn island number two. Like with Snapchat, sometimes if you don't have service, it's not going to actually go anywhere either. I mean, there does seem to be potential roads where there wouldn't be anything on his Snapchat that day. It is what it is. And until we get information back from Snapchat and the data of the phone, the metadata saying, yes, there was in fact deletion, which we don't know yet. That's the assertion that's being made because mom is saying there was nothing there. We don't know of there actual being deletions as of yet. There, and you throw all these into the narrative and it makes people think that something is suspicious. I would also think the authorities, and I'm wondering, do you think the authorities are also being cautious on saying that or treating this as something more than an accidental drowning to out of a litany of caution for all of the friends, all of the people that were around him, not in a way of cover-up, but to prevent a mass mob coming in and saying, see, something happened here, when the investigation simply needs to run its course, but just signals out of an investigation saying, we need to look at everybody's phone, we're going to take your phone. That immediately would signal to people that something is awry, even when, in fact, in reality, it may not be. It's information gathering. But that reads to a lot of people as something far darker than it may actually be.
Gosh, Tony, the authorities are in a difficult position here because it is a very delicate situation, very sensitive, of course, highly emotionally charged, certainly for the family and friends. And so, you know, on the one hand, they want to show the authorities, hey, we are looking into things. We are being diligent. We are looking into devices where appropriate. On the other hand, they don't want to stir up the community into such an outrage that you got a mob with pitchforks. My understanding is that, according to reports, some folks claim they've already been like threatened just simply because they're proximal to this alleged incident and what happened. And so, gosh, how does law enforcement balance? Hey, we want to keep the peace in the community. We also want to let them know if something nefarious did go down, we're looking into it. And I think striking that balance can be a very difficult task.
Yeah, because, and I get what they're doing, that balance is so challenging and difficult because of all the sensitivities. But if you're looking at the law of averages, I just double check them again. Homicides do happen in this area. They're extremely rare. If you're looking at law of averages, there are rip currents there, and related drownings because of those types of rip currents in this area, especially on a holiday weekend. There's about 100 drownings per year nationally from that in this area, and 227 rip current fatalities since 2002. And this area is actually known for those rip currents as well. Jesus. So I know they're playing, you know, as law enforcement, remember that you create filters. Yeah. And unfortunately, when you have all the eyes of the world on you, they want some clarity, but they don't have the clarity yet. So you get statements like the sheriff put out, and anyway, makes it a mess.
Well, and a lot of people, you know, when you think drowning, if you've never dealt with riptides or drowning or anybody, you know, struggling in water, sometimes people think it's this real, I'm out here drowning, somebody help me. Drownings are quite often not that at all. Everybody's doing their thing over here. Hey, where's so-and-so? That's how drownings happen, because nobody saw it happen, because the riptide pulled them out and boom, they're gone. If you've never been in a riptide, you don't know what the hell you're talking about, because they're dangerous, they're scary as shit, and they can take you out pretty damn fast. I've been in one myself. It was scary as shit. So, I mean, that is another thing that came to mind, too. It's not always this, he could have, as well as many other things that could have happened, that is a very dangerous thing to navigate. Even if you are, because they go, well, he's an athlete, he's this, he's like, I don't care if you're Superman.
Oh, yeah.
A riptide will kill you if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
And this one in this area, they're saying is 8 feet per second, roughly 5.5 miles an hour, that's been recorded in this area.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot that could be going on there. The coroner saw no obvious signs of trauma and sent the body to the state medical examiner. That sounds good to me. I mean, that sounds like, okay, we're crossing T's, we're dotting I's. He gave his answer, but he's not like, this isn't the end-all be-all. We need to send it further. So that's good. It shows the system is working. It's being processed. These things do, in fact, take time. But people drowned in homicides, too. Held under, incapacitated, pushed from a boat. I mean, what does that autopsy actually need to show for this investigation to change course, Eric?
Yeah, you know, if the toxicology report came back and there was some intoxication, I'm not saying there is, hypothetically, mm-hmm. You'd want to know the source of that intoxication. Was it self-ingested? Did someone give him something? On top of that, you want to look at not only obvious signs of trauma, but non-obvious signs of trauma. You know, you might not see anything, for example, on the head. A person has hair, but sometimes there can be bruising under the scalp area that is simply not visible.
Yeah.
On top of that, you know, there are internal things that can be examined. For example, when the hyoid bone is fractured, sometimes that can be indicative of strangulation, even if there are no sort of outward marks or signs. You know, if someone has an arm around someone's neck, people bruise differently. So I think that we really got to do a thorough dive into that autopsy, and there could be findings that could be suggestive of a need for additional investigation. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, so many questions. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube for this segment and everything we've been talking about. Love for you to weigh in. We do read it all. We're reading the comments live as they come in as well.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. head on over to spinquest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.